Coming up on this week's book show, renowned radio host Diane Rehm joins us to discuss her new book, When My Time Comes, which addresses the urgent, hotly contested cause of the Right to Die movement, of which she is one of the most inspiring champions. Diane Rehm on this week's book show. Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Renowned radio host Diane Rehm joins us this week to discuss her new book, When My Time Comes, which addresses the urgent, hotly contested cause of the Right to Die movement, of which she is one of the inspiring champions. Through interviews with terminally ill patients and with physicians, ethicists, spouses, relatives, and representatives of those who are vigorously opposed to the movement, Rehm gives voice to a broad range of people who are personally linked to the realities of medical aid in dying. The book presents the fervent arguments both for and against that are propelling the current debates across the nation about whether to adopt laws allowing those who are dying to put an end to their suffering. With characteristic even-handedness, Rehm shows both sides of the argument, providing the full context for this highly divisive issue. Diane Rehm hosted The Diane Rehm Show on NPR from 1979 to 2016. It had a listening audience of 2.5 million people. Her new book is When the Time Comes, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Diane Rehm to this week's book show. How are you?
I'm great, Joe. How are you?
I'm fine. It's very nice to talk to you again and to really focus in on this particular subject. You have obviously been outspoken on this issue for a long time, and I think many people who admire you and know of you know your relationship to the issue. What was your interest in taking on this project and really looking at it in such a deep dive?
Joe, I think it goes all the way back to my early life. My mother died when I was 19. She was just 49, and she really, really suffered at the end of her life, actually begging to die. And at the time, of course, there were no right-to-die laws in existence. Now, just since we began this project of both a documentary film, which will come out next spring, and my book, When My Time Comes, which is based on that documentary film. Just since we began this project 2.5 years ago, we've gone from 3 states which have medical aid in dying laws to 9 states plus the District of Columbia. So clearly, the idea is catching a hold in states across the country. Then, of course, in 2014, my husband of 54 years died after a very long struggle with Parkinson's disease, when he could no longer feed himself, stand on his own, bathe himself, or take care of himself in any way. He said, "I'm ready to die." But of course, in Maryland, where he was in a nursing home. There was no right to die, and still is not available there in that state right now. So John Rehm ultimately starved himself to death and took no food, water, or medication for 10 long days, which is how long it took him to die. It was awful to watch, Joe, and something that really, really inspired me when a filmmaker came to me and said, "We'd like to do a documentary. We want you to be both the narrator and the interviewer." I immediately said yes. We traveled the country. We did about 45 interviews. And in this book, I recount more than 20 of those interviews. So it is an effort I believe in strongly and hope to inspire others to delve deeply into their own feelings about the right of an individual to choose to die with medical aid in dying to end suffering.
Obviously, you have a horse in this fight. You have very clear ideas and thoughts on the subject. There are many people in this book that you talk to who disagree with you vehemently. I'm curious as to what you learned from them. Is there something that surprised you and opened your eyes to their way of thinking, the other side to this?
Here is the other side to this. If you believe that God should be the only decider, I agree with you and support you 100%. If, on the other hand, you were to say, "I want everything that medical science can provide to keep me alive," I support you 100%. And for those of us who want the right to have medical aid in dying, I support us 100%. In other words, it's a matter of choice. And I totally get it when people say God should be the only decider. I understand that. And I understand people who say no one other than God should take a life. And at the same time, I appreciate the fact that some people want to live as long as they can. I support that. But the point is, what we want is choice. Choice at the end to stop suffering.
It seems, in reading the book and the interviews that you mentioned, the 20-some interviews that you include in the book, that at the base of a lot of this is the fact that, let's face it, we're really crummy about talking about death at all.
Absolutely. We are crummy about it because we fear it. Death has been the last taboo, and we don't talk about it. We push it out of our minds. We push it out of our conversations. But then when that time comes, if your relatives, if your parents, if your children don't know what you want, if your friends don't know, if your doctor doesn't know, then we're left in a state of dilemma. I've talked to so many people who said that they had made their plans beforehand. And that's what we're urging people to do, is to talk about the issue, to talk about what it is they want, to understand that death is part of the beautiful circle of life. Not to be feared, but to be understood. We have a beginning, we have an end. And we need to express to those around us what it is we want at the end. If they don't know, then we're in that absolute crazy part where doctors will give us more and more and more treatments, where they will keep us alive for longer than anyone could want without any kind of decent life, simply kept alive on machines or by treatment after treatment, which may prolong life somewhat, but certainly doesn't give us the quality of life that we really want. It's all about quality.
Diane Rehm is our guest on this week's book show. The name of the book is When My Time Comes, and it is published by Knopf. In those states where there is a right to die law, those 9 states and the District of Columbia, as you mentioned, and people do make their wishes known and they are adhered to, what have we seen? What is the effect of that? What have we seen as a result?
It's so interesting that you ask that, Joe, because in Oregon, the first state in the country to adopt medical aid in dying or death with dignity or the right to die, they have been in operation for 22 years. In those 22 years, only 2/3 of the individuals who've been given the medication have actually used it. In other words, 1/3 who have that medication in hand, who have asked for it, who have said, I want the comfort of knowing I have it, have simply chosen not to use it. Also, there has not been one issue of someone being forced to use medical aid in dying against their will. Not a single one. In fact, what you have to have leading up to receiving that medication is for 2 physicians to testify that you are within 6 months of death. Not that you are mentally depressed, not that you are suffering from some kind of other non-life-threatening illness, but that you are within 6 months of death. In some states, you do, in addition to that, have to have a psychiatric examination to make sure you are of sound mind. And in other states, you must be examined by that doctor alone, with no relatives, no friends, no one else present, so that the doctors can determine that this is really what you and you alone want, and that nobody is influencing you to make that decision. So there's been a truly sterling record in regard to medical aid in dying ever since it's been in place.
One of the things that I found fascinating is I remember my own experience with my father when he was ill and before he passed was that he had made it known that he did not want to be kept alive using medical intervention, and if it was natural, it was natural. He did not want to be kept alive with tubes and machines and so forth. Those were his wishes, and that's what he put down on paper, and that's, as a family, of what we were adhering to. So imagine our surprise when he's getting ready to go in for surgery, and the doctor says, you know, what are your wishes? And he says, well, I want you to keep me alive, whatever happens. We all looked at each other and said, well, now what do you do? And what I learned from that experience is that those rules where there aren't firm laws seem to be very murky.
The point was, your father stated what he wanted, even though it was a great surprise to you. He stated what he wanted near the end of his life. He wanted that surgery, no matter that he had signed all those documents. That's why I tell people those documents go only so far. On the other hand, I have a story about an 81-year-old woman who had signed every single document she could possibly have done. She had spoken with her doctor. She had told her doctor what her wishes were, which was not to be resuscitated, not to be given any extreme measures. She had to go into the hospital because she was having a stomach problem. While in the hospital, she had a heart attack and she was revived. She was resuscitated. And when she woke up in the ICU, she was absolutely furious because she had not had her wishes followed. Your father had every right in the world to state his desires when he went to the hospital, no matter what he told you beforehand. So the point is, we must be in constant conversation. We must know what each of us wants and convey that clearly, and know that we are not forced in any way to be consistent. We can be absolutely inconsistent if we choose to do so.
You were talking about religion earlier, and you have an interview in the book with a Roman Catholic priest, and you ask a question, and this is such a great Diane Rehm interview question, so it makes you so good. If the quality of life no longer exists in the mind of the individual, then what should be the role morally, ethically, of the church and of you as a Roman Catholic priest? That gets to it, doesn't it?
It sure does, because it is my belief that only I can judge the quality of my life. And if further chemotherapy, if further surgery is only going to keep me in a state of aliveness without quality of life, I don't want that. But in his point of view, the Bible tells him that only God should take a life. So that is his perspective, and that is my perspective. And I, too, am a religious person. I have been a long-time Episcopalian and consider God to be there for me And I do not believe God wants me to suffer at the end of my life. I believe that strongly. So that while I respect his view, it's not mine.
You end the book with a conversation with your grandson,
who was a sophomore
at Dartmouth College. Why did you want to talk to your grandson about this topic?
Because he is such a wonderful young man, the son of two physicians. My daughter and her husband are both doctors. I wanted, while we were filming the documentary, my grandson Ben was with me at my condo. How wonderful it is to have a young man who wants to spend time with his grandmother. And I first asked my daughter whether I could invite Ben to do this, and she said, whatever Ben says is fine with me. I don't ever do anything like that without asking my daughter first. And Ben was totally in favor of doing it. I talked to him about what I wanted at the end of life because I wanted that recorded not only on his iPhone, but while he was recording me, the videographer was recording him. So that is part of our documentary. I told Ben that this conversation was going to be transmitted not only to him, but I wanted him to then be sure to show it to my daughter, her husband, both doctors, to my son, a philosopher, professor of philosophy, and his wife, to make sure they know exactly what I want at the end of life. I think it's a great conversation to have with a grandson or with a son or daughter, and a great conversation all of us need to have with those around us. You know, Joe, there are death cafes around the country springing up all over the place where people, some of whom know each other, some of whom do not, come together to talk about their fears, their hopes, their plans, their outlook on death. In Indianapolis, there are groups of neighbors who come together for dinners to talk about death, what they want, and what they want their neighbors to know, so that when their time comes, perhaps they do want an ambulance called, perhaps they don't. If I should suffer a stroke or a heart attack, I'm 83 years old. I've had a fantastic life and career. I have two beautiful children and wonderful grandchildren. I've had a perfect, wonderful life. I don't want a life that is dragged out by indignity. That's what my husband said at the end of his life. He said, you know, I've already suffered indignity, having to be fed, having to be bathed, having to be toileted. And as Parkinson's disease takes me further and further down, I will suffer greater indignity, and I am not prepared to do that. And I feel exactly the same way, Joe. So I think these death cafes are a way for people, friends, neighbors, acquaintances, to talk about what they're thinking about death, and then to get the word to their state legislators who are considering these matters all across the country. New York State is right now having this discussion. Maryland is going to bring it up again. Massachusetts will bring it up again. It is something that 80% on polls tell us that people across the country want. Why should a state legislator decide what I do with my life at the end of my life? That's a question each of us should be asking.
In our final moments, the foreword of the book is written by John Grisham. It's a beautiful foreword, and I'm wondering how the two of you came together and talked about this issue.
Well, as you know, John Grisham is a fabulous and prolific writer. He has been on my program, The Diane Rehm Show, many, many times. And the last time he was on from Charlottesville, where he lives, he asked me before the conversation even began, he said, "Diane, what are you up to these days now that you've given up the daily program?" And I said, "Well, I'm working on this documentary on the right to die." And he said, "Oh, I am in such agreement on this." And I then said, "Well, would you allow me to do an interview with you on it?" And he said, "Absolutely." So we did the interview, and then we're going to use that interview as part of the book. And then my editor said, "I wonder whether John himself would like to, instead of using the interview, would like to put down his own thoughts about medical aid in dying." And indeed, John Grisham agreed to that. He wrote the foreword. So I feel very, very fortunate that John has taken such an interest in this topic. And as you say, it's a beautiful foreword.
The book is beautiful. It is When My Time Comes, Conversations About Whether Those Who Are Dying Should Have the Right to Determine When Life Should End. The book is published by Knopf. Diane Rehm, it's always a great pleasure to have you on our program, and I thank you so much for sharing with us this week.
Joe, thank you. It was wonderful to be with you.
A great pleasure. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. And you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Book Marcus for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.